starts now. Welcome to Forging Worlds, everybody. I'm Matt.
And I'm Alan.
And today we are back for the conclusion to a, it's been a shorter world. Sorry about it. Life, you know how that goes.
But we're finally going to talk about the future school at the end, because first we have to talk about who's in the future school.
Yeah, so this entire episode predicated around a future high school, and we've mentioned just like how it's roughly constructed.
Look, you got to build out the world before you can go into one specific zone.
I mean, this is a podcast about world building, and I feel like we've done a pretty successful job of that.
Although, you know what we should do next as a challenge? We should start small and go big.
I mean, that's entirely a good way to do it. Yeah, here's a true story. There was a series of articles that D&D did years ago where one of their top designers, maybe Mike Merles, I don't remember, went in and did an entire bottom-up world build design for an adventure. And he started just in like a village, like a farming village, and made just a couple NPCs and locations, and then stepped it out to like what was around that immediate area, and then stepped it out, and then stepped it out, and then stepped it out, and then stepped it out. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, we can absolutely try that.
I think it'll be fun. But anyways, who are the people that go to the school? We've mentioned a couple of times that we have at least three separate alien races. We have the humans, we have blank, and we have blank.
One of the blanks is a slightly more advanced species, and one of the blanks is a slightly less advanced species. And there's also a nebulous fourth race, that's the shepherds,
who
like the ascendant, are the ascended types. If you're familiar with Stargate, the ancients.
I can't remember if we actually discuss this on mic or off mic. I am really fascinated by the idea of a silicon-based life form.
Yeah, that was in last episode when we were talking about the world. So who do we want that to be? More advanced or less advanced?
I would say more advanced, simply because silicone is something that we use really prevalently in our technologies. So maybe they figured out biotech.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know if this is what you're intending, but I keep thinking about the trolls from Discworld. For the listeners who might not know this, one, please go read some Discworld.
It's very good. It will make your life happier.
You listen, start with like the Moist von Lippwick books, like Going Postal, Making Money, Raising Steam, one of the last ones. They'll just dive you right into the politics of Ankh-Morpork, and it's very good.
Although starting with The Color of Magic is never a bad idea.
No, you just do have to live through fantasy novels that were very much of a time. So the trolls in Discworld are literal rock people. They're made of rock.
See, I see these more as glass people.
Well, yeah, but the trolls, and why I was kind of thinking about this is the speed of their brains acts like is one dependent on the material they're made of, and two, they act like sentient computers.
So yes, that's right.
The reason that they aren't generally considered very smart is because they're out in the open. If you put them into like a deep frozen cavern, their brains become super cooled and they become super computers. And I feel like that's probably something similar to the silicone people.
I see them as very angular, that they may have like random protrusions coming off of them, and that they have a form of bioluminescence. Shows how the biotech is being used. So if something is accessed, it'll glow.
Oh, that's very interesting. My one insistence is that we not make these shard mines from D&D 4th edition because those are garbage rock people.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck a shard mind. I have strong opinions about Shard Mines. None of them are
I have very strong opinions about Kalishtar, and I have not been able to gush about them, and it makes me sad.
I don't know who that is, Alan.
Oh my god, they're my dreamers from Eberron.
Oh, they are lawful
good. Yeah, they're back now. They're lawful good people that got shoved out of the dream world and took on a physical form, and now they can't dream, but like they're awesome and want to get back home and fight for their homeland, and they're really cool. And they make like great clerics. Conveniently.
Yeah, that's very you, Alan. So let's talk more about these people. So presumably, are these going to kind of be our Vulcan types? Like, because of what they are, do they value logic over everything? Or
yes and no. Outwardly, yes. I don't think they can. Like, I don't think their faces are as movable as ours. Like, it's hard for them to make expressions.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so, that tracks.
So in order for them to communicate emotion, they do it through color.
Oh, that's very good. So they come across as kind of cold until you can actually see
until
them.
You learn the code of color and what color associates to what.
Okay.
Because they can be a very passionate people. I want them to have a wide range, that you have the passionate, but you also have the cold. You just have to learn about the people and get to know them to truly understand them. Like, their art and their dance is all based on color.
Okay.
Like, not even shapes, just pigment.
Okay. I like that. I mean, listen, getting to know people before you make assumptions about them is true of any living thing, so.
Very true.
So good thing there. I do kind of want to blaze through this a little bit because we'll touch on them more as we go. What's kind of their social structure, do you think? Because I'm picturing very much just kind of like a biocomputer, like very much almost a pyramid scheme.
See, I was almost thinking of it as a hive.
Ooh, okay.
But not so. Not without agency, though. So maybe back on their planet, their core is made of silicone as well. And they spawned from their core. And so the core contains a lot of knowledge and information that they can access.
Alan, are you trying to make an Ego the living planet?
No.
Are you trying to make that planet-sized Green Lantern?
Mogo? No. Also, Earth is now a White Lantern. The planet of Earth. You're welcome. Anyway.
Damn it, DC.
Anyway.
Okay.
So I don't think there is necessarily a social hierarchy. I think it is true equality.
Okay.
True democracy. Because the hive evens everything out. You know everything that your neighbor knows.
Okay.
Now, with that being said, the kids are going to school because they have to learn about the other cultures. And because that was done relatively new, meeting these other cultures and things, these students are learning things to bring back to the people.
Okay, so that hive mentality is only within a certain proximity to the core.
Exactly. And it's kind of weird, I think, for the students at the school that, you know, I don't think the other species necessarily have a lot of adult support. Like, they have it, but it's not, like, they don't have, like, dorm moms or anything like that. These kids do. Like, they have a lot of support from, you know, their parents and, like, people who come to live with them just to make sure that they don't feel cut off from their society after losing connection with the hive. The older folks are used to it. You know, they go off planet, they move, they do whatever. They experience kind of a severance. But for these kids, it may be the first time, and that can be very frightening. So they make sure that there's a lot of support for their kiddos. Does that make sense?
I was actually thinking about that, but in a completely separate way. Not so much that they bring a bunch of people with them, but that one, they're plugged into the hierarchy of the school in a way that, you know, it's kind of voluntary with everyone else. Like, oh, I'm a fresher in college now. I'm going to go down and like mentor this eighth grader
who right.
just started. I think for them, like for these people, they are required to do that. And their culture, like their home government, assigns each person a mentor.
And oh, so kind of like a big brother, big sister type thing.
Yeah. And I think it's got to be at a parity level where basically the mentor mentors the same kid up to the point where the mentor leaves and the kid takes on a mentor, a mentee.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But also like the way to maintain kind of that, like almost like a weaning off of the just the overbearing ever presence of the community. When you're younger, you're not there all the time. Mm-hmm. Like you do sometimes like a day there and a day home. And then as you go on, you're there. So eventually it's just like, I've been here 3 months. I got to take a weekend to go back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that kind of where they plug into kind of a micro culture there at the school, and maybe they even have like a piece of the core is kept in the school itself.
So oh, interesting.
Every single one of these people in the school is interlinked.
I also kind of want to address something. I see this species as agender.
Sure.
Because they reproduce from the core, the concept of gender just, or the concept of sex and that kind of thing just really isn't a thing.
Okay.
But I think it would be interesting if the exploration of a student who maybe sees a female identifying student, like painting their nails or doing something, they can explore gender identity, and that's actually encouraged by the homeworld. Like, yes, learn. Try something different. Try something new. See if you like it.
And see if it can better enable the greater culture. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's gonna be a recipe for a lot of interesting conversations. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have spent almost 15 minutes so far.
My glass babies.
They're very good. What are they called, or what do the other races call them? What do they call themselves, and what do the other races call them? Because I imagine they call themselves the people, like literally society does.
Mm-hmm.
What do the other races call them?
Shardairs?
As in S-H-A-R-D-H-E-I-R?
No. S-H-A-R-D-A-I-R. Because, like, their planet is Sharda, but it sounds like Shardair, like the heir of the shard. So it's kind of a portmanteau homonym type thing.
Okay. Sounds good. I like it. Cool. So Shardairs from Sharda, species one, the slightly more advanced species. Neat. And humans, good old flesh bags. We know and love them. Well, we know them.
Meat bags.
Species three. Alan, I have an idea for species three.
I was hoping you would.
It's a weird idea for species three.
I already love it.
Because I think it's two species.
Okay.
I think it's kind of a yerk situation, except not...
Ooh. So not symbiotic, like, instead of parasitic?
Yeah, yeah. Something, and I don't think it's necessarily like burrow through a non-existent hole in the ear into the brain.
Is it like a Dax situation from Star Trek?
What is that?
Basically a parasite that lives, not a parasite, but a symbiote that lives within a host. I mean, this has been done in fiction a lot. What's your idea?
So my idea is I'm picturing a race that probably could have developed along human lines. So vaguely mammalian, bipedal, bilateral symmetry, two eyes, one nose, two ears, one mouth. very, very basic human, probably some different proportions to make them alien. Except on their world, they really quickly learned that this kind of this modified slug kind of thing, mm-hmm. that if they put it on themselves and then they encouraged and shaped how it grew, eventually it would become an exoskeleton around them.
Oh, interesting.
So they don't necessarily have... It's how they overcame their planet's predators.
Instead of a slug, let's make it like a spider or a scorpion. Or some sort of insectoid creature.
Insectoid I'm fine with.
Because that really gives plates. Slugs give squishy.
Well, I was thinking slug is just what I thought of, but like something with a hard carapace. Yeah.
What if it's a snail?
What?
What if it's a snail?
Well, that's interesting.
And so when they first bond with the snail, the snail loses its shell, and as they bond with the host, the shell regrows around the host.
Okay, so instead of a snail as we know him, it's similar to that. It just grows its own shell?
Yep.
Okay. I dig that. That's very... Because what I'm picturing is this second, the symbiote... is like over however many million, like thousands of years, millions of years, whatever. Eventually the symbiote has grown long and thin because they're symbiotic with this dominant race. And now they're basically like almost at birth, a new one of these symbiotes is applied to the child and it just lays right along the spine.
Is the symbiote sentient?
That's the thing. I think, and here's kind of why I wanted to try this out. I think it is, and I think what happens is over time, like as the child grows, like this symbiote has developed to where they've got like some vestigial, almost like false limbs that run along like the arms and legs, and that's where the carapace grows out of. But the symbiote also grows with that around the child, like around the skin, almost like a protective gel layer, but also like a muscle, so that during certain... So basically at will, the carapace can open and the person can step out.
Ooh, I like that.
So it is sentient. It's also just like, I think there's got to be some sort of almost telepathic bond between the two.
I like that. So it's, maybe it can't speak, but through the host?
Yeah, I think that's what it is, because here's kind of the idea for this, Alan. What if one day a really advanced one of these, something where the symbiote had grown up around the head as well and made a helmet and had grown like up around kind of the jaw area and done like
and made the plates. Host speak for them?
No. When the host stepped out of it, it turned and like was just going about its business, and when it turned to re-enter, the carapace tried to speak like it was mimicking speech along with the telepathic thought. So, like, long term, this might become a situation where the two species grow up together to a point and then can choose to separate or not.
And then have divergent evolution. That's fascinating.
Right? So I like that this is still at a point where I think this is still at a point where the host is not considering divergent evolution as a good thing.
Right.
But they're also at a point in their society where a lot of people are questioning that. Individuals are questioning it. Society has still not accepted it.
Scientists. They're the ones that are seeing this. But the common folk are just like, oh, that's my shell.
Well, yeah, but I mean, individually, Alan, there are people who are always going to be like, no, equality. Like, and there's just more of them now than there may have been in the past. Like, there may be groups of people that are, like, trying to help their symbiotes develop vocal capacity or able to develop a stronger telepathic output.
In my head, I'm calling them shells. Do you think that's acceptable?
I think that's what people would call them. Yeah,
yeah, right, that's now, my shell.
Until they actually came up with a self name for their
what
species.
If that's the first word they speak?
Maybe. I don't know that we're there yet.
Oh, no, I don't think we are. I think this is future stuff, but I think that's a very interesting idea.
Yeah, and so what I think it is right now is the symbiote and the host are bonded, and they can communicate telepathically, and maybe even, like, if you're very, very close with someone and have a close bond with them, your symbiote can speak to them, and their symbiote can speak to you, but mm-hmm. it's still very limited.
Oh, maybe that's how they know, like, maybe that's part of their marriage ritual?
I was thinking marriage or even because here's how I'm seeing their social structure, Alan. I'm seeing them as very, very, very communal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they never left the tribe stage of personal society.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where now it's all chosen family. Like, there's no direct genetic familial ties. You're just part of this larger community, and eventually you choose your own tribe.
That's interesting. Okay.
So that's kind of how you identify that you're part of a tribe, is when the other symbiotes can start kind of low-level communicating with you. And when you deeply bond with someone, or with several people, the communication gets stronger.
What if there's a taboo of using someone else's symbiote?
Oh, yeah, you don't touch someone else's symbiote, partially because they are quite literally bespoke.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think there's probably been more than once, like, some organizations that have, you know, developed that kind of communal bond and then, like, sedated or removed the host and had the shells go do things for them for a nefarious end.
Oh, of course.
Which is probably the high crime for that society, I would imagine.
So let's zoom it back in. What do these kiddos get out of the school experience?
Well, I mean, education, of course. Cultural immersion in two vastly different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And
what does it look like? What does the symbiote look like on a youngling?
Oh, okay. I'm seeing very much almost like an exoskeleton at first. So they might not have full plates over their limbs, but they might have just like a line of plating down their arm when they're mm-hmm. younger. And I imagine they've probably developed to the point where, like, for sports and things, they use those arm plates for something almost akin to like racquetball or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm imagining like for them, it's all about chasing these two advanced species.
Okay.
Like, they've been, ever since they bonded with the symbiote, they've been the dominant species on their planet. And they've never had to chase anything. And so now they're in the position where they're the lowest of the three. And I don't think that's a perception that is like stated publicly, because all three are close enough yeah. to each other to make this a viable exercise.
Well, and it's very unflattering.
Yeah. But I think it's what the species thinks of itself. They're just like, oh, both of these other two are so far ahead. We can't have that.
Got you. Okay. That makes sense.
So there's now this societal drive to, at the very least, be on parity with them both instead of behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's probably what drove them to bond with the symbiote, was this is our leg up. And so every time, like, evolutionarily,
I actually think, now, again, this is kind of your brainchild. I think it was an accident.
I mean, probably the first time, yes. But once they saw the advantage, they're like, heck yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And just okay. Went for it. We're on the same page.
That's what I mean. Like, they took every single leg up chance that they were given. Like, because I think that's just what the culture is. It's not a malicious thing. It's just like,
are you sure this isn't like a lost Earth tribe?
Maybe, or even like a common ancestor or something. Like, I don't think that we have time to get into
the
like,
same primordial soup.
Yeah, like I don't necessarily know that we need to have time to cover panspermia or any of those rather troubling implications. But we already have an ancient like race, and listen. With very little modification, the story of Noah's Ark or any of those similar stories can very easily translate to aliens.
Oh, boy.
We don't have time to dig into it because we do need to talk about the school.
Oh, boy.
But I do think that we don't also need to shut that down. Like, that's something we can come back to later on and maybe talk about down the road. True. If we revisit this world. So, Alan, who is the current... Okay, so we have this school that runs from 8th grade up to 12th grade. And again, listener, we're going to be using American terms. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like we said last time, we both acknowledge that there are other systems massively better suited. So, basically,
it is secondary school and post-secondary school.
Yeah. Secondary, post-secondary, probably starting in 8th grade, potentially running all the way up through undergrad at least, mm-hmm. with some graduate programs probably offered. Because if you're going to go to undergrad, why not offer some grad as well?
They have a very large xenology graduate program.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, Alan, very large. In a world full of super flora and fauna.
I keep forgetting occasionally that we made Big World, and I'm so happy about it.
It's very good, and also, the more I think about it, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Like, I mean, imagine being at that scale.
Yeah, like, listen, it's the exact kind of world that humans would look at and go like, oh yeah, we can take this. We can break this world. Like, this might have been a site chosen by Australians.
True.
Just because they're like, they're not even drop bears here. We're fine. That was a very bad Australian accent, and I apologize. Yes, it was. I'll do better in the future.
So I think you were about to ask who's the headmaster.
I was about mistress. To ask that. Yeah, head person.
I know that we just did a triad, but it makes sense for there to be a representative from each of the races.
So what if it's not just a headmaster? What if there's someone who's over the collegiate end, over like 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and over 8th and 9th?
To me, what would make the most sense? Silicon era, the silicon beings would be 8th and 9th, mostly because they want to watch after their own children. 10th through 12th would be the shell species, and then higher learning would be human.
Yeah, makes sense.
And this isn't them governing, them teaching. This is just them organizing.
Yeah, and I think because
and making sure things flow. I think there's a very important distinction to make there.
Yeah, and because this is a human colony, primarily, like, founded by humans, shared amongst all three, but kind of pioneered by humans, that, yeah, they would probably have the higher level stuff because it's based on their model. So I like that. What sort of... I guess in that case, are we following each individual species, organizing those grades as they see fit?
No, they work together.
Okay.
But the being over that area has final say. But I think work together.
I think it's probably like final say. However, if they have a question or if the others have a question, they can meet and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know there's a lot of competition in academia, but
this is a perfect idealized world.
At the very least, it's a world where everyone's just like, hey, we're still trying this out, so let's be careful with it.
Well, and they all have the same end goal, which is to educate.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, yeah, that's very
There are no ulterior important. Motives as we're building this world. That will come with plot hooks.
Yes. I think we got to start talking about some actual, like, groups within the school now.
So you have the jocks, you have the band geeks, you have the goths.
I mean, yes.
You have your D&D kids.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have all of these traditional cliques with the added bonus that, like, there are some sports that humans and Shardairs are literally not physically equipped to play just right out of the box.
And, like, the games that the Shardairs play may seem boring to humans. And what are we going to call the third species? We never gave them a name.
Yeah, I'm still chewing on it.
Okay. I'm just going to call them the Entwined right now. That the Entwined and the humans may find boring because it's more focused on dexterity and skill and less on let's punch each other. Because they are kind of brittle.
Yeah.
But no, I think as far as classes are concerned, very basic stuff. There are courses in all of the languages, so...
Probably required courses, right?
Well, yes, but I like the idea that there is kind of a babblefish type thing going on that the Shardairs invented, but during those classes, it's turned off.
I can deal with that. That's good.
So that way they have to learn the language?
I think it's also very much like you learn it up to a point, and then if you want to continue to pursue it, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
but you have to be able to basic read, basic write.
Basic speak.
Basic speak.
Yeah. Yes, that all is good. You're going to have history that has to encompass history from all three worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably actually going to be like, sadly, it's probably going to be a super truncated thing.
Yes. You're going to have xenology, also focusing on all three worlds. So different creatures, different flora, different fauna from the different planets and from the planet that they're currently on.
Yeah.
That's part of biology, too, I'm sure.
Most likely.
Biology, chemistry, physics. Physics would be very interesting because it's very different on this planet.
Yeah, it's lighter gravity, which is always interesting. You're going to have different creative arts programs now because you're going to encompass, you know, three different species worth of art and music. Maybe
the Entwined headmaster teaches basic psychometry?
Object reading?
Kind of, basically unlocking the third eye, kind of.
See, here's the thing. I don't know that that's teachable.
I don't think they know it is either. But they want to try. And I think that's the research interest of the head mistress or whatever, the head person for the Entwined, is to see if that can be something a non-Entwined can do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, research, yes. Teaching, because...
Maybe it's, like, an elective where you can go and help her participate in research. Or, like, participate in research that she is conducting. Sure. I don't know why she became a she all of a sudden, but she became a she.
Sure. Because I think it's more like their unique biology coupled with the symbiote's biology.
Right, but I don't think they know that yet.
I mean, they're a spacefaring race.
How much do we actually know about our bodies, Matt?
Kind of a lot.
But also kind of not a lot. We still have SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, where we just don't know why some babies die.
Okay, I'm not trying to fight you on this. I'm just like, Maybe, do you
get what I mean? Like, it's a greater mystery that
they've been attempting to solve,
but now they have other people.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking it's more of is, like, can someone not from our world bond with these symbiotes and develop the same kind of bond?
I don't know if they would start with a symbiote. I think they would start with trying to get them to talk.
Oh, sure. Like, develop that familial bond. Yeah. And that's all fine. That's good. Like, stretching, seeing the limits of what their symbiotes can do. Yeah. Especially if she's part of that movement to try to push for eventual equality. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think what you're going to have is an expanded arts curriculum because the Shard Heirs are going to be very artistic, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
But again, within their kind of unique sphere. And I think the Entwined Ones, I think they're actually very musical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that they're quite as much in the way of, like, performative art in terms of, like, acting and playwriting and things like that. But I think they're very musical because, imagine this, if you learn that if you shape some of the carapace, the shell around, and you blow into it, it makes a tone. And if you change the way it sits and you blow in it, it makes a different tone. Suddenly, they can just literally craft themselves whatever instrument they want.
That's really neat.
And probably it was first used as like a hunting call.
Agreed. I just think that we have maybe created kind of a artistic renaissance for all three of these species.
Well, I mean, part of this whole deal was that they've hit utopia, or at least humans and Shardos have, and they're probably pulling the Entwined along with them.
But what I'm saying is that, like,
well, in a utopia, if your needs are met, people are more free to pursue creative and artistic endeavors.
Right. But what I'm saying is the combination of these three people are kind of blowing everyone away. Like, it is creating new art and new music and new ideas in a way that no one ever imagined. And I think that is very cool.
Yeah, because I think part of the fun of this is that they're all cooperating with each other on it. So, like, artists from Earth are going and studying with Shard Heirs and being like, oh, wow, that's how you see color.
Mm-hmm.
What we got here? This is, like, let me show you my work and see how that kind of applies to your thought. And people are going to the Entwined world and being like, oh, show me these natural instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can recreate things that we have to do, insane levels of engineering with valves and everything to make it to accomplish. And you just hold your hands together. So, yeah, no, I'm with you on that. That's a very, very cool idea.
So I think the arts program, like you said, is just huge. Like, it's massive.
Yeah.
STEM fields are also very massive. But I also think that there's a really big place for history here of sociology and anthropology.
I think part of that is kind of a lot on the human side. Because that's how their culture, like, the
digest
because that
things.
that was pushed so hard by that first emperor and his council was that, no, you will learn every detail of this so that these mistakes are not repeated. And I think that push for just, like, true and unabashed history is very important from the human side. Like, I think that's probably their bigger contribution to art besides, like, performative arts, plays,
right,
things like that, is they're just like, okay, y'all have music, y'all have that, can y'all tell us every single story you have now, please, because we want to learn it all.
that is definitely interesting.
Okay, what else do we need to do, Alan?
I don't think there's much more we need to do, because I feel like protagonists are really going to be the job of whoever plays in this world. We've really set up a good idea of what the social dynamic is, the economic dynamic is, and where each of these species slot in, and what the point of the school is. Because, to say it plain, the point of the school is progress for all three species, and they are indeed working in tandem and harmony, unless you want to throw in a plot hook that they're not.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the big point is, more than anything, this world is just a palette for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get some players, have them make these characters in whatever race they want to be in, and roll up some stories and see how this world can fall apart when you push it a little bit. Because I think this is a world that, like, it's fairly stable, but stable things only last until a strong enough breeze comes along, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, we came right down to the wire. We've only got about 3 minutes left on our clock. How about you and I take one go and give a quick plot hook, one each.
A Silicon or a Shidare student falls in love with a human.
Okay. I dig it. That's good. So what kind of falls out from that?
It's, I think, the first time that a Shidare has ever been, like, infatuation is different than love.
Yes.
But, like, they form a bond. Ooh, maybe it's with an entwined. And that's how you know, is the Shidare can hear the, symbiote.
Okay.
But they feel like they have to keep it secret because, you know, it's Romeo and Juliet, but without them dying at the end.
Good.
It could be played in Monster Hearts.
That would be very interesting, yeah.
Basically, sexy teen aliens. Go for it. Have fun.
Very good. So mine's going to be a little bit wider.
Okay.
I'm thinking that one of those big superstorms comes up that we talked about, and the school, like, it blows up so fast that the school is put on lockdown.
Okay.
For, like, a day or two. And just what happens when that kind of that boiling point is applied to any other things going on.
I do like that, yeah. Ooh, that could be very interesting.
Coolio. All right, well, there you all go. We have this world. Hey, Alan, I guess we need to name this world.
We did. Paradiso.
Well, I mean, we named the world. Is that what we're calling
it? Paradiso High.
Oh, that's awful. I love it. Thanks, I hate
Or Purgatorio.
Oh, no, no, no. That sets a tone. That sets a tone that I think we probably want to avoid. Like, listen. We all know that...
The high school is hell metaphor, yes.
Yeah, we all know high school's hell. And if that's the way you want to go with your story, please do. Have fun. Tell us how it goes. But let's maybe avoid being just overt with trying to paint this whole setting with that brush. Paradiso High works, I think. I think that works well.
I think I like it.
We did it, Alan. We did a thing.
Yay!
So next month we'll be on our downtime. We'll have two episodes.
If y'all got any more questions,
yeah, if we can pile up some more questions, probably not this next month, but
and get
maybe
weird
November.
With it. Get weird with it.
Anyway, I guess that's it for this world. Another world in the books. I've been Matt,
and I've been Alan.
For John.
You can find Alan at Alan_Sells on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt Hoadley on Twitter. You can reach the show at Forging_Worlds or by emailing us, ForgingWorlds@FifthDraw.com. This show and the rest of the Fifth Draw family of shows can be found at FifthDraw.com. Forging Worlds is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.